Michael Shomak is here. He is the author of Soul Lessons from the Wizard of Oz, How to Follow Your Yellow Brick Road. Hey, Michael, welcome to WGN.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, you know what? I want to start exactly with what we just heard, because Sarah, as always, chooses the perfect bump, because the story of the Wizard of Oz, Kansas, is not just a state of America. It symbolizes a state of mind, you write. Fortunately, it's a state of mind that can be changed, but first you have to realize you're in Kansas in the first place. Michael, what does that all mean?
We are in it.
What?
Steve, we are in Kansas, and I say that with apologies to that fair state. I am not insulting them at all. It's a great state. But we are in Kansas. We are thinking in terms of very simple black and white terms, this or that, you or me, your opinion, my opinion. This is a humdrum, every single day kind of war that we have on the inside of us, just like Dorothy did in the barnyard, in Uncle Henry and Auntie Em's house. I mean, she couldn't escape it. She was corralled by very, very unspiritual thinking, unexpansive thinking. And she had to break out. And we all have to break out of this right now. And I think the book gives us the basic spiritual lessons to recreate our personal lives and recreate the lives we share with everyone else.
Our telephone number is 312-981-7200. If you have questions about The Wizard of Oz with our guest here, then call us or text 312-981-7200. All right, so is the goal then, and you're right, this is the goal, to get out of Kansas, to find a new state.
Get out of Kansas.
Yeah, get out. But then where do you go?
Well, we want to go to a place that's colorful, that's technicolor. We want to go to a place where where we don't have storms brewing every second. We want to go to a place where we can express our happiness and our inner child. We want to go to a place where our minds are free, you know, our scarecrows, where we're not picking at ourselves like crows, where we can go to a place like the Tin Man, where we feel love and we're not feeling like there's something missing from our ability to appreciate each other, and where we stop living in fear. We are not cowardly lions. We are human beings.
All right. There's something you said at the beginning of all that, is that something appeals, you said something to the effect of the inner child in all of us. Do you think that that is really the reason why so many years later, you'd have to tell me how many years, but I'm guessing 75 years later, this movie still resonates with generation after generation, and adults watch it too.
Yeah, it's one of these very rare, it's the authentic American fairy tale. I think it's the only really truly authentic American fairy tale. And as all fairy tales, it has timeless meaning. Timeless meaning. And I think people watch it, Steve, all the time. And they're not fully aware of what it's speaking to their hearts, but they know it. And they can't stop watching it because it's giving them a message.
All right. We'll talk about more of those messages. I think, am I right? Do I remember? Frank Baum, was that the dude who first wrote this?
L. Frank Baum.
Okay. Do you think he had any of what we're about to talk about and what we've talked about so far in mind? Or did he just write what he thought was, oh, my imagination takes me here?
I think his imagination took him there. I think he had symbols that were built into the entire story. I'm not so certain he was as psychological as we are and would have put them down as precisely as we. It's kind of like looking at a picture and an art critic saying, aha, look, this, I see this. No, so I don't think so. I've read the annotated Wizard of Oz. It's not interpreted in the same way, but is it clearly there? Absolutely. I mean, you can't avoid the flying monkeys. They're a Buddhist and Hindu god called Hanuman. They're in the pantheon, of that religion. He must have had tremendous diverse knowledge, which was coming together and kind of breathing life through the story.
Well, you say even the main character, you know, the one Judy Garland played.
Sure.
Could have been named Candace or Cindy or Martha, but it was named Dorothy, and you say there's a reason for that.
Yeah, because the Greek name Dorothy It comes from the Greek, and it means a gift from God. And I think it means your soul. Your soul. And even Auntie M, Emily, comes from the word that means labor, to be laborious. And that's all she's doing on the farm, is being so laborious and so workaday that Dorothy's spirit is being squelched. She can't see straight. She has to get out of the corral. Now, so this is a deep, meaningful fairy tale. And even the names are highly symbolic.
Yeah, and I would have had no idea, but I wonder if the author originally did either, and he just chose names he liked, and you're seeing something in these names that he didn't even see, which would be interesting. But I'll tell you,
it is.
Yeah, and there's got to be something to the story that we're even talking about it so many years later. I want to talk about some of the characters. Well, so talk to me about
the... There's also one other alternative, Steve.
Say that again,
mind.
Sorry?
One other alternative.
Yes?
There's one other alternative view.
What
many
that?
Times these things come through what the great psychologist Jung said from the collective unconscious. He could have had these things in his conscious, in his subconscious, and they came out onto the page. I remember many, many years ago, I called the editor of Superman Comics when I realized that Kryptonian was Hebrew. And he was shocked. But it turns out that the kids were growing up on the east side of New York and had it in them. Okay, so I think these things were subconscious, archetypical things that were in L. Frank Baum because he was an intensely creative person.
Well, now you're taking
whether
me back
he knew it
to,
or not, it was there.
Yeah, you're taking me back to my college psychology courses here. All right, so I do want to talk about some of the other characters. Cowardly Lion. What does that mean?
Well, you know, there. The whole Yellow Brick Road is to remove the judgment against ourselves from the mistakes in Kansas that keep us entrenched there. The Cowardly Lion represents a mirror of our soul, a mirror of our Dorothy. In other words, how many times have we faulted ourselves for not making the move to create the change that we need in our lives because we're living in fear? We're going to overturn the apple cart, or this is going to happen, or this person's going to be upset, or that person's going to be upset, and we lose our strength of will. The Cowardly Lion represents our pure force of individual will.
Isn't that?
And we all have to master that will.
Isn't that the most common reason that people don't do, fill in the blank, whatever it might be, is
whatever it is,
fear. They don't go for it because they're afraid of what might happen. No matter what going for it is defined as, that's what I'm told. The most common explanation for that is fear. And in fact, I can explain that fear. It's usually fear of failure.
It's fear of failure. It's fear of powers that you consider to be powers that you're dependent on, whether it's your boss, whether it's your spouse, you know. Oh my God, what will happen to them? What will they think of me? Oh, I'll lose this, I'll lose that. And yes, you're right. It is fear in some fashion of failure.
So there's the Tin Man and there's the Scarecrow, but most important, there's a dog named Toto. I'm going to ask you about all of these characters. I know that's the greatest radio tease ever. When we come back right here on WGN. Steve Dale's Otherworld on WGN. My guest is the author of Soul Lessons from The Wizard of Oz, How to Follow Your Yellow Brick Road. Michael Shovak is here. Some text asking me to ask about, Steve, you forgot about the witch, the good witch, the bad witch. I'll get to that, I promise. We can't do that, Michael. But first, I promise that, okay, let's talk about the meaning, as we're talking about the meaning of various characters of the Tin Man.
Well, we all fault ourselves for not loving deeply or not loving in the correct way. We all think we've made mistakes where we didn't love ourselves correctly, we didn't love another person, that we caused pain, we were hard-hearted, we didn't allow the feelings to fully appreciate the feelings of another, and we overly criticize ourselves and believe we are heartless. That we're just a mechanical hunk of junk without a heart. We consider ourselves a Tin Man, and we freeze, and our capacity to love gets dwarfed. And that's what we all experience. Loss of fear, loss of heart. And the Tin Man reflects that side of ourselves.
I thought you were going to say maybe we're all a little rusty, but that's probably not true.
Well, no, I am actually, to tell you the truth. When your heart cannot expand and your heart cannot love and even cannot even love your enemy for simply being a human being who's misguided, not that you have to agree with them, what happens is we become rusty, we become arthritic, we become unbending and unyielding and inflexible. So, you know, yes, we rust. Our souls rust.
I was just kidding about that, but interesting that you say that. Now, you know, I think that of the characters, the closest Dorothy was to, from what I remember, was the Scarecrow. Do you have the same perception? And why a Scarecrow?
Because the Scarecrow, yes, she was closest emotionally to the Scarecrow. We know that from the end of the movie. But because the Scarecrow represents exactly the intellectual problem that Dorothy is having. The Scarecrow doesn't think he has a brain. Dorothy thinks she should leave. Dorothy thinks she should stay. Just like the Scarecrow points in two directions to go to Oz. You can go here or you can go there. Or some people go both ways at the same time. That confusion inside Dorothy on loyalty and who she should trust first. And that is the Scarecrow. The Scarecrow is the deepest mirror of Dorothy's own mental confusion.
Hmm. And most important, in my personal opinion, would be Toto, the dog.
Well, you know, the beauty about Toto is that all Toto does is bark and bark and bark and encourage and encourage and encourage. Toto is unstoppable through the whole movie. He is Dorothy's totem animal, from the Latin meaning spirit, anima, spirit. And the whole movie begins when Dorothy's spirit, as Toto, they're trying to imprison in Elvira Gulch's bicycle seat basket, and she's taking the Toto to be destroyed. Dorothy's spirit is going to be wiped out by Elvira Gulch. And Dorothy has to face her deepest fear, which is eventually that wicked witch that is going to imprison her spirit.
And I promise to all of you who want me to ask about the witch, I'll do that next. Both witches, the good one and the not so good one. But before I do, Michael, why did you choose The Wizard of Oz? And how many times have you seen The Wizard of Oz to get all this and to remember all this and to know all this?
Well, I can't count the number. And I still watch it. And still watch it, and every time I see it, there's something else that I get. But
really?
You know, I tell you, I didn't just kind of study it each time I saw it. It was something that, from the moment I saw it, I was in fourth grade, it hit me, and it was speaking to me. And over the years, the meanings of it just kind of opened up, until one day I was in college, and I read an article in Psychology Today on The Wizard of Oz where they related the wizard to being a therapist, where you think it's the therapist that's going to help you, and you basically have to discover what Glinda taught Dorothy, which is you had to learn it for yourself.
Yeah, I'm interrupting. I'm sorry, but you write about that in the book. So you agree with that assessment, I suppose, that you can pick yourself up from your ruby red shoes or whatever the heck they were and get on with it. Is that what Glinda was trying to say?
Yes, because the power that you need is in you. All right? It's not from Glinda. Glinda is a reflection of Dorothy's own clarity and light. The witches are a reflection of Dorothy's own fears of expansion, fears of contraction. She's afraid to stay in Kansas. She has to kill the witch of contraction under her house. And then it's the witch of expansion. She's afraid of adventure. So we all have these mirrors that we have to deal with in life. And the book gives us a very simple way of understanding what we're going through down the yellow brick road of life.
Do you do an impression of the Wicked Witch?
I do.
I want to hear
it. Like to hear it?
Yeah, really, yeah.
All right. I hope everyone out there is listening.
I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too.
And that little dog, the thing that we didn't say about the little dog is that that little dog also expressed unconditional love from when they were in Kansas to the very end of the film.
It is Dorothy's spirit, and no matter how confused she gets and when her scarecrow mind thinks it's dumb, and no matter how confused she gets because she's loving herself over Auntie M and then gets confused and goes back to Auntie M, and no matter how much she's afraid and vacillates between fear and courage, her spirit is undaunted. No bicycle seat from Elvira Gulch can keep that in place. No witch is going to hurt that dog. It's Dorothy's spirit, and that's what we have to concentrate on, every single person right now in the country.
All right, so do that again for me.
My wicked witch?
Yeah.
All right.
I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too.
You don't get that from every radio show on this radio station. Now, about Margaret Hamilton, I think, was the actress's name. I mean, it was her. I mean, she was an actor long before that movie and for many years after. But after she could only be associated with that part, she complained about that. But because I think she played it so well that, oh my gosh, that was her in a way. Who was the Wicked Witch? I mean, what can we learn from her?
Well, the Wicked Witch, you know, the Wicked Witch is a sickly green color. It's all very, very symbolic. She's sickly green. She's envious of Dorothy's power.
Oh.
She's envious of the ruby slippers.
That's why she's green. It's not because she had some bad food the night before.
Right. Dorothy was able to get the power of the red slippers, and she wants Dorothy's power, and she's sickly green. And Dorothy is hungering for more spiritual knowledge. She's envious of power. She wants to be able to be free and get home. So the Wicked Witch reflects that power that Dorothy wants, which she doesn't get until she steals the broomstick of the witch back.
Now why the flying broomstick and the flying monkeys and so many things flying everywhere? You alluded to some of that.
Yeah, well, look, the flying monkeys are a Hindu and a Buddhist god called Hanuman. He's called the trickster. And whenever you go on a spiritual path, if you've ever done that, though I hate the phrase spiritual path, you'll notice that your old self comes back and starts to play with you. You think you're making change, but then it comes back. It's like in Christianity, you'll call it the devil whispering in your ear. All right, it's telling you, no, 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 you're not growing. No, 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 you're not getting anywhere. No, 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 you're not as what you think you are. It's constantly throwing doubts in your ear. It's the trickster, and it will carry. If you pay too much attention to it, it will carry you off into the witch's castle. And you will not be able to get out. You will be stuck there in a spiritual death.
And
okay, the other thing is the broomstick is, you know, well, witches are classically symbols of all the female power that male establishment is afraid of. That's why the broomstick is like is a phallus. You know, it's a phallus symbol. The witch is riding her power every bit as powerful as any man. And Dorothy has to gain her spiritual power that the witch has, that oftentimes is considered to be evil when a woman expresses that kind of power. And this is as true for the female side of men as it is for women. So Dorothy has to claim that power before she can get her male wizard power. That's what has to come first. And every woman, especially today, where women are captains of industry as well as they are homemakers, every woman has to know how to command the broomstick, okay? Command the scepter, that male power that will allow you to get what you want in this world. It's the power of ego.
Michael, what do you do for a living?
Thank you very much. I am a rabbi, believe it or not. You know, and I'm not particularly religious. I do want to tell you,
you're a rabbi and you're not religious. Okay.
I'm a rabbi. I do interreligious work around the world with Christians and Muslims and Jews and helping to, you know, bring people together.
Oh,
I'm also the Social Responsibility Office of the Patton Foundation, which was founded by the granddaughter of General Patton, Helen Eyre Patton. And I'm a consultant to numerous companies and nonprofits, because before I became a rabbi, maybe 25 years ago, I think, I was, believe it or not, Steve, I was a Madison Avenue creative director. And I wrote, for instance, you may know the campaign, Gillette, the best the man can get. I wrote that campaign.
Wow.
And in fact, it's very funny that you mentioned Margaret Hamilton, because one of the stints that I had for a short period of time, I was the creative director on Maxwell House, which was
at that time a good Chicago brand. Yeah.
And Margaret Hamilton found herself in a Maxwell House commercial.
I remember that, actually. And they, listen, Michael, I've got to go to newscast here, but Michael Shovak, the book is called Soul Lessons from the Wizard of Oz, How to Follow Your Yellow Brick Road.